Hi, gentlemen. Welcome and hello, everyone. I've left it like this for a few moments for a reason. I'm Gav Mack, that's Stephen Cotton, that's Ed Hall. I know we're all like sort of like squeezed in.
Yeah, I wondered
what was going on then. I almost instantly changed it for you.
Yeah.
It is indeed. We have review shows. We do it the way that we normally do it. But today, I think we're just going to chat about it anyway. I mean, I've still got the graphics and stuff. I haven't got a table today because you know what? I forgot, frankly. I went for a run and I'm knackered from it. But yes. That's something from yesterday. You don't want to see that. But what you do want to see and what I'm going to put up is this message here. There's no room for racism. Not today, not any day. It's been going on constantly and I will not stop talking about it. And if you don't like hearing it, you could disappear because as far as I'm concerned, I couldn't care less because there's no room for racism in this sport, in life whatsoever. Not today, not any day. Right then, that's the particulars out the way. Right, so there's been a couple of games that have happened this week. People are moaning about certain things. Thank you very much. That's fine. You can change it back now. That was horrid.
I didn't like that at all.
He didn't like it.
Boss in like a little like retro video game.
Yeah, you do.
You can, of course, subscribe and like and share all of our stuff on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, etc. At Tut Top Football. If you put our name in Google, our name comes up first. It still does, which is great. But I want to start off by talking about a ex-Manchester United player who is on course to win the Ballon d'Or. Messi Lingard, is up and coming. He's a young lad. We all know it. But he bagged a brace the other day against Aston Villa. Cotton, you're our resident Man United fan. What are your? Are you made up for him?
Yeah, I'm happy for him, man. Like we said it on one of the bonus shows we did a few weeks ago I think it might have been the watch along actually, but the fact that Lingard moved on, it's bittersweet because I really like him, but that kind of shows the ambition now. Like Lingard was good enough to play that role under Van Gaal and a little bit for Mourinho, but like now we've got Bruno, Donny, like there just isn't the room for it. Like we've actually pushed on now and we're progressing and we don't need a player like that caliber
world
anymore.
World-class players, like what do you mean? It's world-class, mate.
Cool. He's up and coming as well. He's got a long future. But yeah, I'm glad to see him. I'm glad to see him playing. Glad to see him scoring. He, in fact, I think I've got it here. He now holds the record for scoring in consecutive games. I don't know where it is. Consecutive games, but his last game was something like 192 days ago or something. So he scored in back-to-back games, but not for like half a year.
Ed, what do you think?
Jesse Lingard. Thing is with Jesse Lingard, yeah, I quite like him as a player. I generally do. I think he got a bit of a hard time. But you know when he does interviews and that, I'm like, oh, you're such a wet wipe. Do you know what I mean? But like, he's just so Fortnite, don't care less, does he? I love him. But West Ham, man. West Ham to bounce back after that defeat to Liverpool, because I'll admit, as a Liverpool fan, we were there for the taking. They could have got Liverpool, but respected them too much. For them to bounce back and go with a 3-1 win is fantastic.
Villa have been doing all right as well, but like, you know, being an Arsenal fan, I'm still, you know, like Cotton will dig me out, and I know he does. He does it every time I mention Martinez, and any time an Arsenal fan mentions Martinez. But I do miss him. I do miss him just for what he did at the end of last season. I felt it warranted enough for him to come on for Arsenal and start. But you know, a couple of these goals, he needs to do better. And is that the reason
Lingard
why?
Second.
Yeah, in particular, you know, both of them, the two of the goals, was it the Suchet one that went underneath him as well? It's just like, come on, son. So, Suchet's on fire, man. I really like him. He's not going to be at West Ham next season, unless West Ham gets to the top four. You know, never know. It's a crazy year.
I look at Suchet and think, well done, David Moyes. You've sent scouts to scour Europe for the next Marouane Fellaini. Like that is what he is to Moisey. Like that is literally a Fellaini regen, and he's getting the best out of him. And he's just—it's not even just his goals. His all-round midfield play is just nuts at the minute for West Ham.
Mate, the statement David Moyes is making after that whole Pellegrini situation is unreal. Like I think he—I don't think he gets enough plaudits for that. Like he's just took it on the chin.
And I've dug Moisey out a couple of times. I won't necessarily take back that I don't think he's that great. But he's doing well. This is the kind of manager he is. He does well with smaller budget teams or mid-table teams sort of thing. And he does well with them. I still can't imagine him ever having a proper top job again. But yeah, West Ham are absolutely flying at the minute.
Yeah, they are. Villa, they've gone through a little bit of, they're going through a bit of a transition almost, if you want to call it that. You know, a couple of players are coming back from injury, a couple of players going out with injury. And, considering how well they started off the season, they are, a bit inconsistent at the moment. So it's perfect, the fact they've got Arsenal at the weekend, isn't it?
Yeah.
The only way I can say it, I'm actually scared about it.
But Villa will be fine, won't they? Villa will be fine. Like
of course.
Well, they ain't going down.
I didn't mean it like that. I mean, they're gonna have a good season. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, do you reckon they'll get in Europe?
Could get Europa, but they do need to get back into consistency. Or however I pronounce it.
I think there's a lot of teams in and around those Europa League positions, so it's going to be tight come towards the end of the season. So Villa, I don't know.
What about Leicester? What do you reckon they'll do? Do you reckon they will go? Will they get top four, or will they be like just on the outside on the periphery again?
I think they'll do it this year. I think them losing it on the last game of the season when they shouldn't have even been in that situation. And would it not be for the break? Like, that will be a driving force, knowing they messed it up once. I think Leicester can do it this year. And they've dealt without Vardy, which is, something they rarely do. I mean, they've had some shake-up games, but it's been all right.
Well, it was this game before. It was Leicester, it's Fulham that they beat Leicester at the King Power earlier on this season. So there could have been a little bit of nerve going around coming to this game, knowing that they didn't have Jamie Vardy. And then Fulham would have been buoyed by this, thinking, right, we know what they're about. We know what they can do. They haven't got Vardy. Let's get a result. But Fulham were nowhere in this game.
Oh, Maddison was amazing in this game. Can I just say, he was amazing in this game. No, but this was one game where I just couldn't take my eyes off him. And to be fair, even though Maddison was the man of the match for me, he might have actually been man of the match and never actually found out. But Iheanacho was real good that game.
Is that the opposition, though? Because, do you remember, it's only about, 3 years ago, 4 years ago? Not even 4 years ago, was it? When he was still at City and he was scoring a goal this week and then Rashford was scoring next week and then it was those two just constantly going forwards and people were going, who's going to be better, Rashford or Iheanacho? It was something that was going around quite a lot.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was fun. Yeah. Remember that back in the day? We used to discuss it in pubs. Yeah, it was great time.
That was one of those. As soon as City were just willing to sell him off, it was like, there you go, there's your answer. if they're willing to just let him go, then that ain't the case, is it? This game, Fulham have been really good in the last few weeks and have been really good defensively and really good as a unit, and they were not in this game. They were all over the shop. Leicester could have had a handful of goals. To be fair, Fulham did have one or two good chances, but I think the one good chance fell and Schmeichel, it was a great save, tipped it over the bar. But that was about it. As soon as Leicester got that second goal, it was pretty much done. There was no coming back.
Yeah, because that would have been equaliser. Was it Aina with the header?
It might have been, but it was point blank and Schmeichel tipped it over. It was really, really good save.
Yeah, solid header. Fulham, are they every week we look at what's going on down the bottom of the table and as every week goes on, football cliche time, there's less games to go. But is there enough about Fulham that could keep them in the Premier League?
No.
Maybe. Honestly, man.
Well, I'll go yes then.
It's not that. It's at the start of the season, I would have wrote them off. I thought they were awful. I thought, oh my God, they're so going down. But in the last 6 weeks, they've shown some real resilience. And if it weren't for Brighton and Burnley going on a run, I might have thought they'd do it. So they still could. But, Sheffield and West Brom are definitely gone.
Fulham have just got rid of AK-47 as well, so they've lost a bit of firepower. So I don't know if they're going to stay up. But yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Right. You've given me like three different areas of segue to go into here. So with Gunner, as you said, Gunner last. Why don't we go with that? So that, why can't I see what's going on down here? There we go. Probably because my glasses aren't real. I just went to hide my bags. Wolves 2, Arsenal 1, which means we will have to speak about United after this game for a reason. Arsenal dominated this game for 45 minutes and 38 seconds. Sorry, 46 minutes and 38 seconds. Complete domination. Scored a goal which was ruled out correctly for offside. Lacazette was brilliant, putting in strings like from a front position. He actually reminded me a little bit like Firmino, not getting involved in the goal scoring, but coming deep to win the ball and getting other players involved. I'm not saying he's as good as Firmino.
No, I'm agreeing with that. In my head, I'm thinking, oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, but. No, that's an Arsenal, just the transition of play between midfield and the forward line. It actually made me feel like Arsenal were 15, 20 years ago. I was like, this is really nice. And we got the goal, the Arsenal did. It was a lovely move once again. And it was Nicola Pepe, who's hitting a bit of form at the moment. He's looking all right, playing from the left. When he plays from the left, you don't know what he's going to do as such, because he will always on the right-hand side, cut inside to use his left foot. This time, he's playing on the left, but still sometimes will cut inside. And he ended up making two players before putting it home with his chocolate peg. So I'm thinking, this is nice. This is the Arsenal that I want to see. I just finished dinner and I stood up. I was taking my play out because I was like, right, there's like Arsenal got a goal kick. So there's no danger. With 2 minutes on the clock.
So it's your fault.
I'm gonna go get myself a beer and like have a fag and then sit down and get ready for the second half. And then the moment of glory where Willian Jose, that is running through on goal. David Luiz is running alongside him. Rob Holding's running there as well. And David Luiz, you know, for me, I don't think it is a pen, personally. But as soon as you give the penalty, you have to give a red card. Because he's given the referee a reason because he's sort of ran across him. But it's more Willian Jose's foot getting in contact with David Luiz's knee than the other way around, for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's, do you know what, it's, like you said, right, first of all, it's clear it up, it's the law. And the law states that it's
the law.
So for everyone that's saying, talking about double jeopardy and it's the wrong thing, it's actually not. It is the letter of the law. It's, if he gives the penalty, he has to give the red card. Does he need to give the penalty? That's the kind of question. The whole, I said this to you before we started, like, I hate this whole, and you see it every single game, whether it's middle of the park or if it's in the penalty area, players know what they're doing. When a player with pace or someone they know is going to get away from them, players instantly do that thing, hands go straight up in the air. That's like, if when you see a child pretending they're not doing something, you know
that's
they're
up to something. Spotify listeners. Yeah, Stephen Cotton has currently got his arms in the air.
And they go up and they stay there. But yeah, as soon as you put your hands up and then you run diagonally across the back of the defender, we all know what you're doing. Whether you're trying to make the contact, whether you want to make contact, whether you're trying to put him off balance, players do that to get that clip on the back of the heel. And while they've got their hands in the air, they can say, oh, ref, look, I was trying to get past him without touching him. Luiz hasn't intentionally touched the player,
no,
but he's touched the player. But his movement of going across the back of him, he has touched a player.
There is, there's contact.
And like you've said, there is no intent in this rule. You either take him down, or he either goes down or he doesn't. And it's a soft one. But if your team is, you've got to look at it the other way. If your team was on the end of that, are you telling me Arsenal fans wouldn't want a penalty and a Wolves red card?
I could sit here and be as angry as I want to be. And I was so angry, I actually gave myself a headache on Tuesday. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. Got Villa at the weekend. But the winning goal came from Moutinho, Jaume, who I've always loved, with what a strike. That, I'm glad there weren't any more goals in that game, because that is the type of goal that you want to win a game with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah.
But hold on, before, but, yeah, But I think the thing as well is, like, I know it did change the game slightly, getting a player sent off on a penalty, right? But then Arsenal just go into complete self-destruct mode and just do stupid things, like suddenly the football went out of the window. And then, like, what's the last thing you need? And hold on, before we even get there, how many times, Gav, have we had this conversation about how much of a liability David Luiz is?
Like, oh, yeah.
I know
his third red card in the league for Arsenal. I think it's his fourth.
His reputation might precede him or whatnot, but, like, let's not be surprised if David Luiz.
But he did it at Chelsea, and he's done it for... He's never done it for Brazil, as far as I'm concerned. But he's done it for Chelsea. He did it at PSG. He did it when he came back to Chelsea and was doing it at Arsenal. So how can you not know what he's going to expect?
Since making his Premier League debut for Arsenal, David Luiz has received more red cards and conceded more penalties than any other player in the competition, which is 3 red cards and 6 penalties. Right. So when you've just had the game turn on you because you've had a player sent off, and right, let's dig in, lads. Let's try and get this game back. Nope. Let's come 30 yards out of our goal and punch a ball out for a throw in. Solid move there from Bert Leno. Like,
I thought it was just.
No, you didn't. Really? He swats the ball away like that. Come on.
That was so easy.
But what is going through his head? Like, so that's the thing. When Arsenal fans want to just blame the referee because you've lost the game, like, I know it's upsetting, and I know it's, well, and we'll get onto that in a minute. But there was other situations in that game where you've let yourself, like, you should have been 2 or 3 up before the sending off anyway. Like,
should have been, yeah, exactly. You hit the woodwork 3 times.
Yeah, but yeah.
Goal disallowed and bad, sorry.
Yeah. I mean, Wolves, they needed this. They've been on a really, really poor run, man.
Awful time they've had recently. Awful time.
And I think we said it on one of the bonus shows as well, that you can't even just put this down to no Raul Jimenez either. They're not creating anything. They're not defending well. They're not doing anything like the Wolves that used to last season and the start of this season's sort of. But no, Raul Jimenez isn't an excuse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm not buying that either. Not buying that.
It was for a little bit. Well, the first few weeks afterwards, I'd say.
Yeah, about a week or two. There was like crosses and stuff where you thought, Jimenez is on the end of that. Yeah. But now there's no excuse for that.
I do not buy it. Manchester United 9. Oh, I love doing that as well, by the way.
Well, having to write out the number.
Yeah, they do it on the telly, so, you know, why don't we do it as well? Manchester United 9, Southampton 0, equaling the record highest victory, in the Premier League. Manchester United doing it for a second time, and Southampton doing it for a second time as well.
Well done, Southampton.
I actually tried to write out the ticker tape along the bottom in the same vein as I did the previous game, but I ran out of characters.
Oh, wow.
Because you can only have 200 characters. So I couldn't even put, I couldn't even put their names. I couldn't even put their full names in there. But is this game blemished because, you know, Southampton were playing with 10 men after just 76 seconds?
And so right, they should have been.
This game
right, they should have been, man. Like, that tackle is just, like, okay.
You call it a tackle? That's
I was going to say. Well, I was about to say, I'm giving the guy a little bit of leeway. First game in the Prem, wants to make an impression. And yes, he did all over McTominay's thigh. Like, it's one of the worst I've seen in a long, long time, man. Like, as far as...
I've been arrested for less.
Yeah, like, do you know what? The pitches don't even do it justice. The full speed of that challenge is just absolutely sickening. I mean, you've got no complaints. Hasenhüttl stood there with his hands up like, mate, like, what yeah. have you just done to us? You saying that, does it not count? We'll go back to the footballing side of it and the goals and stuff in a minute. But honestly, I don't know if you watched the coverage on BT afterwards. It was like, literally like we'd collectively agreed that was it. There's no more football ever again. Sorry, lads, like that. This was the last game ever. It was like a funeral, mate. Jake Humphries is literally like somber toned and low voice, like. And Southampton there, and you hate to see it, and should he have been sent off? And it's like, honestly, right? We had that horrific game against Sheffield United the other week, yeah, where we had 2 very clear decisions wrong. And Jake Humphries is like, oh, great for Sheffield United. It doesn't call for VAR to be looked at or like well, we need to get to the bottom of this. We win a game 9-0 when VAR was involved once, when we're already winning 6-0, and they're like, scrap the whole thing. We need an inquest. This is an outrage. Man United are profiting. Get out of it. And I was just literally like, mate, in the post-match, 10-minute post-match, they didn't show a goal. They just talked about why Bednarek has been sent off.
Well, there weren't any goals anyway. There weren't any goals of note that we want to talk
right,
about.
Right, so first goal, Wan-Bissaka. I can't remember the last time Man United ever scored a goal where the left-back crossed to the right-back. It's nice to see Wan-Bissaka getting on the score sheet because everyone says he doesn't enough. Second goal was Rashford, was it? Yeah, Rashford.
Yeah.
It was a nice, nice goal. Bednarek, OG, it was going in anyway. Cavani, powerful header, like you expected to see from him.
I really did like Cavani's one.
Martial, finally.
Martial looked good.
He looked good when he came on. It's about time, but both of his finishes were cracking. But then we get to this, and we get to one of our new segments on the show, which is this.
What the f*** was that?
So, yeah. So, obviously...
I didn't even know that was there. That's amazing.
So, the incident in question, obviously, that everyone has been talking about, doesn't care that we won 9-0, doesn't care that we won a game of football. It doesn't count. Technically, we get a 3-0 loss. Because Bednarek got sent off for a perceived foul.
Whoa. We got one before that.
What the f*** was that?
Oh, yeah, Che Adams. Yeah, I forgot. Look, mate, sorry, I forgot about it, because all anyone's ever talking about is why Man United won the game, because Bednarek got sent off. Yeah, it's tight, man. Do you know what, right? It's going to sound like I'm just because I'm a United fan. When they actually drew the line on Che Adams, yeah, from the perspective, he is like a Nats bollock. Hold on, no. When they do the red line, Gav, it's done on angling software, right? Us at home might go, oh, that's not at the right angle, but it is. The issue with it is he wouldn't have been offside, I don't think, when the ball was played, because I sent the picture to you.
Oh, God, yeah.
The still image they use on the screen that they're drawing the lines across and stuff, the ball coming off of Armstrong's foot looks like Sonic when you hold down and tap B and do that power up. The ball is about 4 inches long on the screen and a blur. And it's like you can't be certain that the point of impact for the pass was when Adams was offside. Like you could literally, if you could knock that back, if you could literally do like 1,000 frames a second and you could just skip back a few, there would be an image where Che Adams is onside and the ball is still at Armstrong's foot or Ward-Prowse's foot, whoever took the free kick. So it's not necessarily was Adams offside. It's there can't be technology that fine for decisions like that when you can't even tell when the ball's been played.
I can record better stuff off my phone.
It's mad.
That's what kills me. I'm just gonna try and find the image of that quickly and stick that on, because
I've got it here.
There it is. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It is shocking. And I don't know where the red line version is of this, but I do have alternative there as well. So
get it up.
Speak amongst yourselves, guys. Talk about Bednarek.
It's rough, man. Martial's already going down, but the player clips him on the way down. I particularly couldn't have even cared because it was 6-0. I think it's a little bit naughty of Martial at 6-0 to try and go down and win a penalty, but he's anticipating the contact.
What would you have said at 0-0 if that happened?
At 0-0, I'd have kept my mouth shut because I'd have wanted the penalty. Because, yeah. but we can all sit here, yeah,
and no, we can all confidently say that. We could
ask 100 people, like, and okay, maybe
what,
3
family fortunes.
Maybe no, but maybe 3%. If you said it's 0-0, would you like your player to dive and win a penalty and get someone sent off, even if you know it's a dive? There'd be a few football purists that'd be like, "Nope, not, and then and I'd be like, yeah, go on, then. I don't care. Like everyone does it. Every team does it. How many times have you had like decisions go against your team like that? So, but I think it's a bit naughty at 6-0 to be doing it.
Yeah.
Bednarek clips him.
Right. Bednarek does clip him, but he's already on his way down.
Yeah, I know.
So this is why this is perfect. That VAR, not VAR, because this is a perfect situation for a case of overturning it. But I want to know what the referee on the day was thinking when he saw that.
Mark Dane.
Your old pal.
Well, the thing is, do you know what? Yeah, I thought I was imagining this, but I saw loads of people moaning about it afterwards. He looks at the monitor, right, and he's looking at it for about 2 or 3 minutes, and he turns around and goes, and like shakes his head and goes, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then it's like, what do you mean you don't know? But then, okay, if what everyone's getting their panties in a twist and not forgetting, it's the VAR is clear and obvious, right? We've all looked at that replay, yeah? Every different angle, he's touched him. He's already going down first. The pundits in the studio were split. Well, he has fouled him. So if none of us can make up our minds again, Mike Dean's literally there in a pressure situation. If he can't see that he's made a clear and obvious error, because he can see him touching him, then it still has to stand. So he still has to go.
Yeah, it's still a spit penalty, but it's a shame that he got sent off. Let's go back to the image. This is the ball being played. I would normally have on the whole thing. Sorry, Ed, your face is in, and you're going to see me in cotton. But what is that? And then,
yeah, lines. But that's what I mean.
Sorry.
The issue VAR looking stronger. The issue is with that, like I said, with Che Adams is a millimetre offside, but would he have been offside before the ball was played? I do just want to moan even more with the VAR thing, especially with the David Luiz and this Bednarek one. Fans do play fast and loose with VAR, depending on how it affects their team, because. Everyone recently has been clamouring, saying, scrap the software, let the referee be accountable, let the referee make the decisions. The referee makes the decisions. This is bollocks. We want a computer looking at this. And it's like, you can't, because it's against your team, now suddenly want less or more technology. It has to be one or the other.
Time for challenge flags. I don't want someone in Stockley Park trying to make a decision for me who could be refereeing my game on Saturday. I don't want that. How many cameras are there at every Sky game, every BT game, every TV game as a whole? There are cameras all over the place. You pick whatever angle you want. Literally. So from now on, if I've got VAR, video assistant referee, you are helping me out. I want to say, right, okay, well, I think that's a foul. And it could be, do you know what? I reckon that's a throw-in. I reckon that was a throw-in to me down there. I've got two opportunities. I've got two flags. And I'll throw my flag. And after that play is finished, until the ball goes out of play next, that's when I, as a referee, whatever, can go back and have a look at the screen. And then we have a look and be like, yeah, I agree with you. You get your challenge back. Or, no, I don't agree with you. You've lost your challenge. You get two flags. You can have them at any point during the game. And the clock stops. None of this, we're going to just, we just want to buy some time. So we're going to use a flag. Nah, the clock will stop full on. So you can't waste time at the end of the game just to put a bullshit challenge in there to try and, antagonize the opposition. I think it's, I love my NFL. It works in the NFL because you don't just get frivolous challenges, but you also get referees that all are in full understanding of the rules and of the laws at that time. So it needs. It needs a proper overview. I don't think the laws need to change, if I'm honest. I really don't think they do. I think it just needs to make sure that all the referees are in full agreement of the interpretation rather than opinion of what their interpretation means. And then the managers should be allowed to have some form of challenge and get through it that way.
I think what's upset everyone as well is obviously they've not overturned the Luiz decision, which for me... is right, because it wasn't a mistake.
I think it's correct,
because it wasn't intentional, but by the letter of the law, it is what it is. The Bednarek one, what's upset everyone is that they've got it wrong on field with VAR and then overturned it. And it, like, part of me is just like, but isn't this what you want? Isn't this what, like, it is sort of trial and error, but we've said this before, but like, okay, so that was the right decision. So why, like, you've got your player back for the next three games. It was at 6-0. You didn't lose that game because Bednarek got sent off. Do you know what I mean? And it's just, again, where you can't have, you can't be for and then suddenly against it when it goes your way. Like, or we get, Southampton had a bad week with it, don't get me wrong, especially with the Villa game. But also another thing with, it's really not good enough with the PGMOL or whatever it is, coming out and saying, Soz the next day. Mate, after the Sheffield United game.
And it literally is like that as well. They did. Here's an official statement from the PGMOL. Soz.
Soz, lads. Mate, literally. But those were two decisions that could have been VAR'd and weren't. And coming out the next day and saying, sorry, we got it wrong. That, like I said,
it's Eddie, literally got the archives out.
I'd like to make a statement.
But it is. Gav, it's like you saying, it's like me saying to you, yeah? It's like, oh, your favourite artist in the world's J. Cole. And it's like, oh, J. Cole. Oh, I had two spare tickets to his gig last week. Oh, you could have come with me. That doesn't help you a week later.
Yeah. It's a bit late now, isn't it?
When
I've been
the game
five times anyway, so it doesn't bother me if I miss it.
When the game's gone, there's no point in turning around and going, oh, yikes. You're going to love this one, Ollie. I just know you're going
to
laugh.
Because you've got the opportunity to have a look at it there and then. And it's not just me as a referee. It's also him as a referee who's in a frigging office with a couple of his other ref pals, as well as the fourth official and the two assistant referees as well. So you've got six referees looking at the same thing and they turn around and go,
What if a manager got sacked from that game?
Yeah, innit?
You know what I mean? What if that was like Lampard's last game and then it's like, yeah, we messed that up?
Do you know what? Yeah, I like Chris Wilder, but he made a comment after the after that game when they were asked about both goals and how shady they were. And he was like, about time we got a bit of luck. And it's like, but it isn't like swings and roundabouts, man. It shouldn't be,
it's against us, you know, because Arsenal have been involved in a couple of situations. Mane with his elbow on Tierney, you know, how was that not seen? We had the Trent Alexander-Arnold studs on one of our players as well, at the Arsenal as well. There's been a few that Arsenal have been involved in. Yeah. So I understand why they feel aggrieved, but it's not some conspiracy theory against Arsenal. And I don't buy it. Does my friggin'
exactly
head
that. Because I literally said to someone that said something about that, like, unfortunately, like, because you can put still images next to each other and say, why was this a penalty and why wasn't this a penalty? Like, context
watch
of the
it
game.
In real time. Watch it in real but, time. Watch the speed of the game. Look at the,
not,
look
not
at, look
just
at
this,
the situation.
Yeah. Not just this one, but the Bruno one with the stamp on the back of whoever's foot it heel the other day. When we were doing a watch-along, I even said, oof, I'm surprised they're not looking at that. I am quite surprised. Or maybe they did and they just didn't.
Yeah, but see,
I think they did, actually.
You said that. Yeah, you said that. And I looked at it, I was like, in real time, I was like,
that's not bad. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But then you watch it again, you watch the still, it's like, that could break his leg.
But the problem is, every single team in the league can build that big archive Ed's got there. Every team in the league this year could build an archive of still images of things that were given against them and things that weren't given for them. We can all do it. The officiating's been awful for everyone. And again, it's not a merry-go-round and it's not, well, you got a penalty last week that shouldn't have been, so we're going to get one this week. It shouldn't be that way. Like, players, if it's a sending off, it shouldn't matter who you play for. They should get sent off. But the consistency at the minute is so bad that no one knows whether they're coming or going. No one knows the rules anymore. Players don't know whether they're offside. Like, it almost is like we're in a middle school. And at the end of this week now, we just need an assembly to just stop this football for a week and go, right, this is it moving forward now. These are the rules. This is how it is. Do you know what I mean? We need a point to restart what the laws are, because no one even knows anymore.
So in this assembly, what Jesus bangers are we going to be singing?
I was naked. I was there. Oh no, I was naked. I was cold. I was naked. That's the one. That's a band.
You were cold.
Yeah, that's naked, the one. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
the
creed one.
And the color and the name.
That's don't the one. Yeah, yeah.
That's a bang. Yeah. Wait, do you remember? Which one did you ever sing? Who's the king of the jungle? Ooh, ooh. Who's the king of the sea? Bubble, wubble, wubble. Who's
I know
the
that king
of the universe?
That sounds like a T-Pain track.
The
jungle of
the sea. We say he's J-E-S-U-S. Yes, he's the king of me.
Wait,
don't watch them ones, man. Honestly, that was...
I know that one. I know that one.
Do you?
Do you all forget the fact that my primary school used to do it? But it's like, we all went like primary schools and they make you sing. Like, we're part of a cult, man. Like,
yeah,
like, man. We were like trained up when younger, like, Jesus. Like, we had no choice in it.
Yeah, I know. But like, no one made a thing out of it. Do you know what I mean? It's just nice. Jesus bangers. You know Jesus bangers for the one. Anyone with their favourite Jesus bangers from primary school, please feel free to put them in the comments.
Ed, you saying that, yeah, that must have had a massive effect on me, because my favourite, my favourite band ever are a Christian metal band. So I must have come out of lower school and then just been like, I want some Jesus music, but I need some, this is it. Yeah, this is what I want.
I like Rick Ross and he bangs on about Jesus pieces. So
true. And Kanye.
And Kanye, he's currently the gospel number one. I don't understand how. Anyway, back to the Rugal spiel. Burnley 0, Man City 2. Talking about Jesus bangers. Jesus, every time Jesus has scored for Man City, they've won the game.
Yeah, because he plays against bad teams.
It don't matter. No, he's played so much this season.
He scores against these teams. He doesn't score against the big clubs, man. Like, I've got beef with Jesus.
Do you know what?
that sounds like a track as well. I'm going to release that.
I feel sorry for the audio guys right now. They're thinking, what?
that's coming out.
Back and forth now between Cotton and Jesus. Like.
We'll release that. That'll be released on the Tip Top record label sometime in the next month or so.
I've got a beef with Jesus.
He was in the right place at the right time. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't spectacular.
It definitely wasn't his Last Supper.
No, it wasn't.
But it was a sterling performance from Raheem as well.
Next game.
City just steamrolling, don't they? They're proper just... Not so much just come out of nowhere, but they've just absolutely just... putting everyone to the sword, don't they?
Yes, they are. Oh, God.
We need a Liverpool win at the weekend so bad.
We do. Time for this.
What are Everton?
They won.
This was a good game of football as well.
Brilliant game of football. Leeds 1, Everton 2, Sigerson about just before 10-minute mark. Calvert-Lewin finally getting himself back on the team, on the score sheet again. You know, it's been eight games without a goal now.
Yeah, it was December, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, so it's important for him, and it was a good header as well. Excuse me,
really
Rafinha.
Good header.
He bagged as well. Lovely performance from Rafinha. But, you know, as a whole, this was probably... the most exciting game to watch in knowing that both, like in terms of both teams, you know, from a United fan point of view, you'd be like, oh yeah, you know, we scored 9 goals. How is that less exciting than this? But this is two teams going at it. And you know,
the game was already done after 25 minutes, wasn't it? So it was
kind of like... Yeah, you've got to put loads of praise on Leeds. You know, they play such a fantastic brand of football. They're a joy to watch in the Premier League, aren't they?
Shut up.
Look at him. You're such a snake, man.
No, but the thing is, that was perfect. Like, if I didn't know your voice, that could have come from any presenter.
Yeah.
I'm trying.
Breath of fresh air. Because did you know?
You've been so top of Google on anchors.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, that. But did you know that prior to the 2020-2021 season, this current season, did you know that no Premier League team had ever played attacking football until Leeds United were promoted? Little fact for you there. That's,
to be fair,
straight from Opta, that one is.
You know what? I've actually got something slightly better than that, and it's actually got a bit of substance because Everton, this is only their fourth win. It's only their fourth win in over a century at Elm Road. That's quite impressive, guys.
It is, yeah, it is. Can't watch a lot of work in his
No,
magic.
No, Fur Cotton's.
That's their fourth. Yeah, but they haven't played Leeds in about 100 years.
That's like one of those horrible stats where it's like, Gareth Bale scores for Tottenham for the first time in 900 days.
Oh, my God. So, the one they put up in the FA Cup when he bagged in the FA Cup, like, this is the first FA Cup goal in 9 years. It's like, he had been FA Cup,
Walcott's was really bad. His first goal for Southampton in 16 years.
He's not been there. Leeds, to be honest, before they won on their obviously monster run, which is going to get them to the Champions League, made it, you know, they made life hard for themselves before that, didn't they? Which, you know, could have got them involved in a bit of a relegation scrap.
Yeah, they've not had a very good run recently. It was ever since what's-her-name came out and said they only got promoted through COVID and the Leeds fans went mental. They went on like a 5-game winless run sort of thing.
Yeah, so it sort of like vindicated, didn't it? Like, Carrick Carney's back on the telly now because it's like, oh, Leeds, shit. But no, Leeds have been playing great football. I'm not just trying to...
I'll tell you what, a cracking game as well. Patrick Bamford had another great game. I hope both of you are ready because I hope you've seen all the talk this week about taking him to the Euros.
What?
This is Gav.
Mate,
bear pundits calling.
Which one's you then? No, I said Euros. You said call up.
No, I didn't. You said Euros. I said if he gets the golden boot.
I need to go back and listen to that. Because
Gav, you're in trouble, mate.
All three of us.
I said sure.
Your kids can live with me for a bit until you get back.
Appreciate it.
Because Calvert-Lewin's just gone for a dry spell while Bamford's just been bagging goals and getting assists. Like, and plus, if Gareth Southgate wants to play a system where like we just use Kane up top and then we want to swap him out, like Bamford can kind of go in there as like a.
I'm hoping, you know, he's 28 years old. I'm hoping that is.
Let me have a look at Patrick Bamford while you're talking. I need to confirm this.
Oh, God. We've got
our statistician. Oh, I can't even say it. Statistician.
Stat man.
We've got a stat man head. He's a stat man.
Was it on my face?
What?
On what?
No, because I just clicked back. I thought you got like some fucking stat up.
We thought you were about to go get some mad things out. But like, there's another striker who could get an England shout, who has already been part of it so far, and that's Callum Wilson, and he got an assist despite them losing 2-1 against Palace. They were 1-0 up after just 2 minutes. Jonjo Shelvey. And then Riedewald, who I dug out a couple of years back. But to be fair, he was playing left back quite a lot when I did dig him out. He's playing a lot more in a midfield position, which is a midfielder. He came through the Ajax Academy. He knows how to play football, let's be real. He bagged in. And so did Cahill, Gary Cahill, who is 62 years old now.
Yes, that Riedewald strike, right? First time you see it, it's like, ooh-wee! And then it's one of those horrible things when they show the reverse angle and it takes a deflection. It was still a nice strike, but just the deflection, it was so close to being such a good goal. And now it's just like a goal. Cahill's header is the thumping kind of header that you want to see your big lanky centre back making it like the near post. Like, everyone's corner should be like that. Cracking header. I feel sorry for Steve Bruce. Since he made that statement about 2 or 3 weeks ago when he said, right, I'm going to play it my way now, they've played good football. They've got a win or two.
Why wasn't he playing his way for like the year and a half, 2 years beforehand? Like,
because I'm assuming he was told to play a certain style with certain players involved.
By who? Mike Ashley?
Well, why would he not? Why would he not play that way? It's... it is a bit baffling. I mean, they didn't win this game, but like the signs are there for Newcastle. They are improving.
Yeah, and like Callum Wilson is a top striker. It was his assist for John Joe Shelvey. And then, you know, they've got Joe Willock from Arsenal. So, like, maybe he'll be able to help out a little bit in terms of an attacking point of view. Alassane Maximam is back, is fit. So, you know, there are some good signs for Newcastle. But I'll just, honestly, and Newcastle fans, I'm not trying to dig you out at all or anything like that. But I can't see much of a difference the way you play, the style of play that you've got right now, much different to the Rafa Benitez. And this is someone who watches you neutrally as well. So I'll watch your games, Newcastle fans, and I'm thinking, right, okay, this, that, and the other. Sometimes you can argue about team selection and all that sort of stuff. Fully understand that. However, the team isn't that much different. It's not that much different to when Rafa was there. So what did Rafa do so damn good, which was, you know, streets clear better than Steve Bruce?
Because Rafa Benitez has been a world-class manager.
I was going to say, he's won the Champions League, isn't he?
Yes. You're basing it on what Rafa has on his CV.
Of course I am, because it comes with that like aura, you know, which he earns, and Newcastle fans would love that. And then you took it away from him, and they've got Steve Bruce who's come in, and I agree with you both that he's got exactly the same, and he just gets hard done by. But the fact of the matter is, they've got rid of Rafa. He's come into these players, and he's playing the same football as Rafa did. He didn't introduce something new. He hasn't evolved what Rafa Benitez did. That's why I feel like they might be increasingly frustrated. But I do get that Steve Bruce has been just as good as Rafa.
Yeah. Yeah. So literally, Gav, to answer your question, when you say what has Rafa got that Steve Bruce hasn't got? And the answer is a Champions League winner's medal. That's it.
No, a continental name.
Yeah, that's it, man.
This is Stefan Bruccini.
To be fair, he has won La Liga.
No, of course he has.
What did he do in Newcastle, though?
He got them promoted when they should have been promoted anyway.
To be fair, he's won the Championship and the Champions League.
Yeah, that's cool. Gav, you're right. If it was Stefan Brusovic and he won the league at Mainz, the Bundesliga 2 with Mainz, then everyone would be clamouring for him. But because it's Steve Bruce and he likes pies,
I just love that. Like, we go to Mainz and we'll talk about why more than likely in a second. Because, you know, Jurgen Klopp got Mainz promoted. You know, that's something to gas about, right? But
yeah,
Jurgen Klopp also got Mainz relegated. Yeah, and that's why Tuchel's the guy. He got them promoted and they got them into Europe. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Honestly, before we carry on with that, you do understand that when you get someone promoted for the first time and then you get two 11th place finishes, I bet you Mainz grew like financially sound.
Of course.
What about when they got into Europe?
That's not the point. I don't care about who made the most money. I'm saying is when Mainz get relegated to the second division, they're going to be much more equipped to come straight back up.
Yeah.
I've got all this money. I don't care about money.
I do it for the love, baby.
Talking about Mainz, the gaffer there was Jurgen Klopp. What's going on in Liverpool, Ed?
Gav, I told you in my contract, if I was to come back on this show, we'd be talking about Tottenham and West Ham.
Cotton didn't countersign that contract, so until that point, it is around the corner for you. You can bubble together.
Yeah, sorry, I've been busy.
Cotton's been too busy making things like this.
What the f*** was that?
He didn't sleep for 48 hours.
I was saying two weeks' work, that was. I'm not even furloughed anymore. I'm not even furloughed. I could have gone back to work, but I was like, right, I'm making this 3-second video. I'm going to have to take another two weeks.
I've got the timesheet anyway. If you check your email address, Cotton, you'll be able to see. I've signed that off. I've signed that off, but I ain't signed off your new contract here.
So what's happening with Liverpool? I'll be honest with you. Like, I'll just quickly gloss over the fact that after the back-to-back wins with Tottenham and West Ham, two away games, after having such a poor away record, I was feeling quite good. And, you know, even with that goal from Shaqiri to Salah, that second goal against West Ham, do you know what I mean? I was looking at that.
Out.
And I watch us play and I think, you know, we're still that good team. You know what I mean? Like, we can be fantastic at times. But we do look not physically, but also mentally drained. Like, we, because the fact is, at the end of that game, Andy Robertson and Jurgen Klopp said, we're not in a title race. And it wasn't like downgrading. Like, that's not Liverpool. Liverpool have never been like that under Klopp. I think they're just tired. But yeah, you know, I think the problem is that when our attackers don't score, we don't have the defence in line to repent that one chance a game a team gets. And Brighton had more than one chance, by the way. Brighton were good.
Brighton looked all right. Yeah,
I'm not saying it was like a one chance rob or anything, but the thing is, we were always at risk of losing that game while the front three weren't firing. I know Manu weren't playing, but still, we're losing something in the midfield because Shaqiri walks. He just walks, but he does something really cool. So you gloss over the fact that there's no engine in the midfield.
But, do you reckon that's what's been, you know, I agree with you, Ed, on that with Shaqiri. And do you think this is why he's never been able to make it at top clubs before? Because he's been around.
He was a winger before who just kind of walk. You know, like how Messi gets away with it now because he's like 30-odd, but he has been like one of the best players of all time. So he can get away with
it. He's still spraying one.
Yeah, Shaqiri won't do that. So Shaqiri will just wait for the ball to be pinged to him so he can do something cool. But it's like Ozil at times. You're playing against 10 men. But he gets covered a lot more than he did at Stoke. But
yeah, I did question during the game, and I did put a tweet out about it. Because McManaman was on commentary absolutely crying because Liverpool weren't winning. He's probably one of the worst biased commentators. It's horrible to listen to. But they were literally just saying, and I know it's true, but they were like, oh, they're desperate to get Henderson in that midfield. They're suffering tonight because Henderson's not in the midfield. Henderson. You've just signed two centre-backs, right? One has literally been played like every game for Schalke. I know it might be a different system.
Bar five when he spat at my man.
Could I just say, we would have played Kabak, but he wasn't eligible to play.
That's fine, but you also,
So Ben Davies, meant to be like, I think we see promise in Ben Davies and I think we plan on using him. But someone who's just come from the Championship to the Premier League to be thrown in the spotlight where all the media's on Liverpool like their new defenders, Klopp has never done that with star players.
No, I get that, but what?
He would have put, I think he would have put Ozan in like that, but he couldn't do it. And Nat Phillips and Henderson were really good against West Ham. So I understand
they
why
were,
you
they were. I'll give
yeah,
you that.
I understand. I do understand that. And I do understand that they don't just want to throw him in at the deep end. But my question was because they were saying that they were that desperate to get Henderson in the midfield. Yeah. It's like, if it is that desperation, throw the lad in. Like, if you're a professional centre-back, you should be able to play centre-back. Like, would he be any worse than Phillips? Like, would there be that much difference? I don't really think there would have been.
I think the worst thing you can do to a player is just hang him out to dry sometimes, though.
No, I know.
Played top flight. So I honestly believe we would have used our centre-backs had we had him.
Yeah. But yeah, that's all I was saying was if it was that desperate, because they were obviously like going absolutely mental about it.
What's the crap with Thiago? Because I love Thiago. He's a world-class central midfielder. He's been around the block. He's won league title after league title for Bayern and for Liverpool. Me personally, Bayern and for Barca. For me personally, I don't think he's a Liverpool player.
I don't think he fits
the style and the shape of the way Liverpool play. And some people will probably sit there and go, yeah, but you're a professional footballer, so you should be able to do this and do that. And people like that, I don't give airtime, because that is literally...
Oh, I just said that as well. I just said that about centre-backs.
No. It's slightly different. I'm trying to work out. Do you know what? Yeah, even if it is the same thing as what you just said there, Con, which I don't think it is, the thing is there, that's the manager. The manager has decided not to play him. This is Thiago, who has come in, is playing regular games, and is not up to Liverpool scratch. Liverpool play a different style of play. So I don't know, that's what I mean. Like, from a Liverpool fan base point of view, Ed, what are your thoughts on Thiago?
There's an element of that. I mean, I was so excited to see Thiago. I am still enjoying watching him play football for Liverpool. You know what I mean? I wouldn't say he's coming, he's just been crap. Like, but, you know, he's been all right. Thiago shows promise. But I know what you mean. Liverpool are, the best word I can use for him is sometimes when they're attacking, they're very unpredictable. It's like muscle memory, how the attackers and midfield knows where each other's where each other is going. And like a player like Coutinho suited us that well, because he could either, you know, do a nice little dribble into the box, or he could ping a 40-yarder. You didn't know which one you were going to get. You know, the front three is very much like that. Thiago is just brilliant at what he does. You know the pass he's going to do. You know the dribble he's going to do. But he executes it perfectly. With Liverpool, you lose that quick sharpness. But here's the thing, man. I genuinely think that them front three have been playing together so long with the same midfield. I think it might just be hard to get used to them, because they're a very unconventional attacking force.
Yeah.
Just here's a... Explain to us why this is a case. So this is Liverpool's results against the Premier League bottom six this season, right?
Yeah.
Why is this so hard? So they beat Sheffield United. It's been that they've got like the results. They haven't got whether it was home or away. So they beat Sheffield United 2-1 at home, but then drew 1-1 with Brighton away, drew 1-1 with Fulham, drew 1-1 with West Brom, drew with Newcastle, lost to Burnley and lost to Brighton. Is it a case of playing the bottom teams that they do sit in deep and hit you on the counter?
Everyone
does that with you now, because everyone's calling. It's like when Leicester won the league and then that was it. Everyone clocked. It was just that long ball over to Vardy.
So basic 4-4-2 against the high line.
Because I know the teams won't do it to us. And it's not that's not a criticism either. It's just because Champions League is about just using your philosophies against each other. But they backed themselves to hit us. But Liverpool, man, everyone's doing it. And we started to see it. That's why we brought Thiago in. The problem is, and it hasn't been the transition into this team we would have liked for him, to be honest with you. We are struggling to break down teams. And a big part of that's our midfield. If it was Thiago, Fabinho, Henderson, that'd be Orgini rotating the four of them to keep him fit. That'd be a solid midfield. He might be able to break it down.
It is a solid midfield, 100%. But if you've got to look at this, and like, how many years have Liverpool done this? Liverpool have done this 4 years. We're going back to the early 2000s up until before Klopp turned up. So 15-year period, you call it that, right?
Are you on about losing against the lower teams? Because that'll be true.
It's like, right, okay, we're going to play against United, we'll beat them. We'll play against Arsenal, we'll beat them. We'll play against Chelsea, we'll beat them. We'll play against Spurs, we'll beat them. Play against whoever at the top, we'll beat them. Oh, Swansea, oh, we lost. Oh, yeah, Burnley,
leave it out. But to be fair, this is probably the first time under Klopp this has happened, because he did come and change that for us.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think every team does go through that. So it's easy to draw some similarities. But I think top four for Liverpool this year would be good. Have a good run in the Champions League. You know, we've added players to a Champions winning squad. You know, just get everyone recovered, get everyone back fit, get our strongest 11 out there, and maybe add some more quality. We'll be challenging for the title next year, easy. You know, but you've got to get top four, though.
Do you think Klopp has a problem with not really having a plan B? Like, once you're 10 minutes into a game and it's obvious that Burnley are just going to sit 11 men behind the ball, we haven't seen him change anything up. He might make subs and bring on a like-for-like player, but he hasn't gone, all right, then we'll do this, that, we'll try and counter it. It just seems to be, we'll keep going until we score, and if we don't score, we lose to Burnley and Brighton.
No, to be fair, like, I understand why you're saying that, because you're reviewing it on this season, but what Klopp's done is, with the same group of players in most turn, what he did is we started off with, what was it, the G-Gen? Is it pressing?
Yeah,
the Gegenpress.
That's what we adopted from Dortmund. And we were kind of, they called it, remember, media loved to call it heavy metal football or whatever. Yeah. They were creaming off that, bless them. They were dead proud of themselves. And we would just go at teams. And we know we had injuries, but we were really exciting and we were getting results. But that only really got us as fourth, because it was kind of like, let's just see how this fight goes. You can't retain that over a season. So what Klopp did is he then swapped it to using the fullbacks and adapting a slightly higher line, not the high line we've tried to do recently. And he's completely changed us from that G-Gen, whatever it is, to this
Gigapress
new today. Since we've changed, we obviously 97 points, won the Prem, you know, won the Champions League in that time. He hasn't stopped winning. This is the first time we've really started to see a problem with it. So I expect him to go for another evolution with Liverpool now.
Yeah, this is the worst slump form that you've had, really and truly, underneath him. So, you know, Allow it to happen in a way, because, you know, every team goes through bad form. It's okay, you know, Arsenal going through it, and Sheffield United have been, but they're turning things around. Two wins in three games. And this one, what a six-pointer. Sheffield United 2, West Brom 1. If I'm honest, I wasn't blown away by the football that was playing in this game. Bogle bagged. What's that?
I'm surprised by that. You know what I mean, like literally, like
no.
Regardless of what you saw last year, regardless of any season ever, if you just saw the word Sheffield United versus West Brom, your heart wouldn't skip a beat.
We almost did a watch along for this, but I'm really proud of Sheffield United for this. I really am, because they haven't played badly this season. They don't concede a lot of goals. They have been unlucky in a lot of games. They don't have a goal scorer. Funny that they played Billy Sharp and he bags.
Billy Sharp has been their most clinical finisher for the last like 1,000 years that he's been at the club. Like,
yeah, since the last season he didn't score as many goals was when was 1066.
Yeah, and that was because the Battle of Hastings interrupted the season.
Exactly. So there you go. I haven't got a table up, as I said before. We are coming at the kickoff of the.
It's already kicked off.
Has it? So. Couple of comments. Flo, who does the Bundesliga show with me, loves the shirt. Of course he does. He's a Leverkusen fan. I thought he'd be watching, so I thought I'd wear it for him. And then my boy over in Uganda, Manasseh, how are you? He says, prediction, Spurs 1, Chelsea 2. Interesting. And what are your boys' predictions for this game?
Oh, don't worry about that. Get this. Patrick Bamford, 18-1 to go to the Euro. So I think you're sound, Gav. 18-1. What you do is you put money on him to go to the
Euro. Stick 20 quid on it. Yeah, stick 20 quid on it and you're laughing.
When he goes, it covers it.
Yeah, we're laughing.
Covers part of it.
Do it. So stick 20 quid on him to go to the Euros to cover your ass.
I'm begging that we get over 2.5. Well, hold on. Let me tell you what I'm hoping we get. But I actually just want, like, as long as it's a decent ding dong game of football. I don't know whether it's been the crowd. I don't know whether it's been playing 37 games in the space of a week. Every game really this season. I know you said that Man United have been boring you, mate. I've watched a lot of football in the last few months that, like, even the attacking teams that are usually exciting have been pretty boring. Like, we're seeing games between, like, United Arsenal 0-0, Liverpool United 0-0. Like, these games that you want ding dong affairs with red cards and karate kicks, and it's just been a bit of a damp squib. So I'm just hoping we get something.
It's because they mean too much nowadays. Like, you'd rather just not lose.
Yeah. Well, like we said, it's that every game is the first group game of a World Cup stage. Like, nobody wants to be the first one to blink, and it's just that is what it is.
I do believe that Timo Werner is going to bang.
I think he's going to come good. I do.
Chelsea versus Tottenham.
Who started? Is Alderweireld playing? Because they've needed him back, man.
That's a bit naughty from James. Over the ball, onto Ndombele's shin, down onto his foot. Have they booked him? Have they VAR'd it? Have they done anything? I don't even think they booked him. That's
I'm going to go with a 3-1 Chelsea win. A 0-0 draw would be perfect for me.
This is going to be 1-1.
Cotton, what do you think the score is going to be? / what do you want it to be?
I'd like
Spurs win would be better for you, right? No, a Chelsea win would be better, wouldn't it?
Yeah, maybe a Chelsea win. Chelsea 2-1 or 3-1.
Oh, they're both on 34 points, so who cares?
Draw would be nice.
And what have you got on your slip?
I have over 2 goals, 30 plus booking points, 10.5 corners, and either team to win. But it's one of those Paddy Power ones that if it doesn't come in, I'll get it back anyway. So.
Oh, happy days. All right then. Well, I'm Gav Matt. That's Stephen Cotton. That's Ed Hall. You can follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch at Turt Top Football on all social media platforms. And did you know if you put Turt Top into Google, our neck is up first?
No, I didn't.
Southgate out.
Well, now you do. Yes, I agree. Southgate. All right.